It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new poetry collection by Milwaukee philosopher and poet John Cady comments on the human experiences of time, life, death, and even math.
This is Cady's 13th book of poetry. This one is called Cemeteries and Galaxies. Here's how Cady thinks about those two words.
The cemetery kind of alludes to the privacy that we have while we're alive and which vanishes with our death, and the galaxies alludes to the kind of vast impersonal universe in which we're situated.
John Cady is a distinguished professor emeritus of philosophy at UW-Milwaukee, and he joins us from his studio in Milwaukee. John, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
The first line in this book of poetry is a question. Where did it go wrong? And in my head, it triggers, okay, where did what go wrong, John? What do you mean? Why did you begin with this question?
Well, I just feel that it's a kind of time of a certain kind of disillusionment. But the poem goes on to talk about how it's not that anything in particular went wrong. It just seems like a free-floating anxiety and disillusionment that seems to settle in, maybe just as you get older, or maybe it's an artifact of our time. I'm not sure. It's just a kind of generalized sense.
I appreciate how questions pop up all over your poems. And when I read them, that question mark feels like a little more personal, like it's speaking to me. And I'm wondering, how do you view writing questions in your poems?
I guess I'm always wondering about things, and I'm never sort of confident in any conclusions I draw. So there's one poem I think that points out that one of my favorite phrases is, and yet. So as soon as I say something, I immediately have second thoughts and start to qualify it. And it's just the kind of cast of mind I have. My temperament is basically inquisitive, but I'm not so good at resolving these kind of questions and uncertainties.
I wonder if that's the philosopher in you coming out.
I think it probably is. I mean, that's really what philosophy, where it begins. And in fact, I wrote my graduate dissertation on skepticism, which is the idea that we don't really know anything about the world. I mean, I was opposed to arguing against it, but that's one of my main philosophical obsessions. And I think that's true of most philosophers.
I was struck in the poem My Privilege when all of a sudden Jasper Johns appears in this poem. And I was like, Jasper Johns, you mean the flag artist,
yes.
The big American flag artist.
Yes.
And so I paused and it's like I just first had to take that moment in and then realize, well, I just need to get more into this poem here. Can you talk a little bit about that poem, the relationship between poetry and visual art and Jasper Johns in this moment?
Well, Jasper Johns was closely associated with some friends of mine when I was in graduate school, and he was also a friend of my favorite poet that was so important to me, John Ashbery. And a few years ago at the Whitney, there was a big retrospective exhibition of Jasper Johns, and it talked in the catalog quite rightly about how private his work is, that there are flags and there are targets and there are beer cans, and they're all mundane public objects, but they seem to have some private significance for him, which isn't disclosed by the work itself. And that's what I began thinking about. The impetus to most of my poetry is this private sense of what it's like to be alive, that you alone have, and it seems like the most special thing in the world. But of course, everyone has it. So in a way, it's also the most commonplace thing in the world. And that's what the poem is about. There was the catalog for the show included some complaints about how Johns was, you know, a white Southerner, and yet his work doesn't sort of address his racial privilege, which is true, but that's because his work is addressing his privacy, not his social situation.
I wonder what privacy means to you as an artist and a scholar.
Well, it's the condition of human consciousness that you are acquainted with the world of your awareness, but in some sense it's private to you, and you're the only one who has access to it, but it's true of all of us. And that's really the main theme of my work, this kind of sense of conscious privacy, as well as wonder about one's relation to the world and to time.
Do you have a special place that you write, or do poems come to you anywhere? What is your process like?
My process is, once I sort of have kind of an idea or some lines that come to me, my poems start in the shower. I write in small bits, maybe 2 to at most 10 lines at a time. And I'll get out of the shower and sit down at my desk and work on those lines and keep fiddling with them until I like them. And then later in the day before dinner, I'll have a martini and look at the lines I wrote in the morning and fiddle with them some more. And that'll be it for that day. And then the next day, I just pick up in the same way, in the shower, then at the desk, and then later in the day, revising. And I keep doing that until the poem is finished. I don't usually have a sense of where the poem is going to go, except in a very general way. In fact, I once wrote a poem, the title poem of a book of mine called The Constructor, in which it was over 200 lines long. And I started with the last line and then worked backwards line by line until I got to the beginning. And it was a marvelous way of feeling that you were discovering what the poem was about. But that's the way I write, in increments.
I like the rhythm. You have a rhythm to your day, a rhythm to how you proceed through poetry. And it sounds like it's not rushed or it's not exact. You can kind of just go where the poetry goes through the course of your day.
That's right.
We are talking with poet and UW-Milwaukee Distinguished Professor Emeritus John Cady. His new poetry collection is called Cemeteries and Galaxies. John, you brought a poem from this collection to read, and would you read Against Materialism for us?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I should say a little bit about it. It has an epigraph from the early 20th century German mathematician David Hilbert, and it also alludes to the 20th century logician Kurt Gödel, who proved one of the most important results in the history of logic back in the 30s. Gödel was a very strange figure, and he was firmly against what you think of as a materialist view of the world, and that's what the title is alluding to. The epigraph from Hilbert reads, "That Schmidt, he didn't have enough imagination for mathematics. Now he has become a poet. For that he had just enough." Against Materialism. I think I knew Schmidt. He preceded me in his fascination with mathematics and poetry and his weakness of imagination. But that's all I can tell you. Gödel said the axioms force themselves on you as true in a way to be explained, which doesn't recognize your name at all. And I believe that poems can do that too, though beyond their solitary refuge from the world, I'm not aware of any deeper kinship. He said his highest ambition in life was pleasure of cognition, and I guess I felt that too, though never with the intensity he did, that takes what the imagination gives it and then makes it real. He included, materialism is false, on a list of things to keep in mind in case he happened to forget them. And suddenly it seemed to me in my embarrassment that of course those things we want to talk about are real, for what else could they be? And it's not just numbers and minds and other things we think we have to try to work around, but history, as it simultaneously imagines and explains us, social worlds we reify and live in, things so commonplace it's easy to forget how strange they are, like books and DVDs, new kitchens and the budget plans we buy them on. These things make up the furniture of the world, and if none of them pass muster metaphysically, so what? It's enough that what we think of them be true, that we can separate fact from fiction, thought from superstition, axioms from angels. As for the holy grail of what there really is, Horatio, instead of less than meets the eye, I like to think there's more in my philosophy than I can dream of or imagine, though I can't take credit for it, since it's what I found and went along with, and it would have happened anyway. Rest in peace, sweet Schmidt.
John, thank you so much for reading that poem. I'm trying to wrap my mind around what is the intersection of poetry and math and philosophy. What does that connection look like?
Well, actually, about when I was about halfway finished with the book, I realized what I was actually up to in these poems. I had a very religious upbringing, Catholic upbringing, but that rapidly fell away in junior high school and high school. And it was replaced first by a kind of secular romanticism and then by an obsession with modernism. And we usually think of modernism as something having to do with art and literature, but actually, I think it pertains to both mathematics and physics and to philosophy. And I know a lot of people think of them as incompatible with each other, but I never have. I've always thought of first physics and then math and mathematics and then poetry and then philosophy, all as different aspects of this obsession with what it's like to have an awareness of oneself and the world and one's relation to it. And I began also to feel that modernism was really kind of falling away and may be over, that it's been replaced by an increasingly social consciousness in poetry and a kind of identity conception of poetry.
How does that track then when you talk about privacy?
Well, it doesn't. Those social issues are a more recent development, but the poets and artists that modernist artists that influenced me so much and that I, aspired to were people like T.S. Eliot and Wallace Stevens, and I've mentioned John Ashbery, Marcel Proust. These are all the important influences on my work and my outlook. And as I say, I think it even pertains, though it's kind of hard to go into, to things like physics and mathematics as well.
Are there constraints in philosophical thinking or in the discipline of philosophy that are freer to you in writing poetry or in poetry itself? Or are there still the rules that you feel give some definition to poetry?
Well, I think that's a very good question. I published about 2 years ago a book called Thought and Poetry, which is really various essays about largely about the relation between philosophy and poetry. And even though I've kind of softened this view somewhat, I think that both poetry and philosophy can start out from the same sources with a wonder and puzzlement about, say, the nature of the self and the mind and its relation to the world. But philosophy is subject to a lot of constraints and disciplines. It has to be logically consistent and coherent, and it has to start with a well-defined issue or questions, and it has to propose answers to those questions and then consider objections to those answers, and then it goes back and forth in that way. Poetry can start out with some of the same wonders and worries, but it's not constrained in the same way. So that, for example, in philosophy, there's almost no one subscribes to a certain view of the mind called dualism, though I myself actually do in a funny way, but not a strange way. On the other hand, in poetry, you can indulge yourself in dualism to your heart's content. You're just trying to figure out what it's like and what it means to sort of think that way. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right. I think both poetry and philosophy can start from the same questions and wonders, but philosophy is subject to more constraints than poetry. And that's what the essays in this book really so try to develop.
And in your poems as a reader, I mean, I'm grappling my way through, maybe along with you at times. I feel some of that togetherness, like we're working through things here together from a reader's vantage point as well.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way, because that's what I try to do. I mean, I try to start with some worries, and then work through them and change my mind about them as they go along.
John, thank you for the conversation. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I enjoyed it very much, and thank you for having me.
That was poet and UW-Milwaukee Distinguished Professor Emeritus of Philosophy, John Cady. We talked about his new poetry collection, Cemeteries and Galaxies. Cady will host a reading from his new poetry collection at Boswell Books in Milwaukee on Friday evening.